So I had a, I found a, I don't know when this question came in, but there was a question in my box. I actually had two questions. One of them I couldn't read. I couldn't read the handwriting. So if that was your question, I'm sorry. Maybe you can throw it in sometime today. This question though, how can you distinguish real persecution for righteousness' sake? So one of the Beatitudes is, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So I think sometimes we, obviously in some countries they experience very clear persecution for their faith. So they're, and I think really, so that, you know, you see people who lose their lives, who are imprisoned, that sort of thing. But I think we can be persecuted too. But I think what we have to be careful for is that we're persecuted for righteousness' sake and not for our own foolishness. Yes. Or our own, even our own misguided display or expression of our Christianity. So sometimes we say things that are just foolish. And so really I think to know if you're persecuted for righteousness' sake is this persecution related simply to your belief or faith in Christ or your expression of that faith? So a lot of times I don't know, it's kind of hard to say you've been persecuted when you haven't lost a limb or your life and you're free, but I think we are persecuted in some ways, and I think we just have to guard our hearts and check our motives. Are these people frustrated with me because of something I've done or said or the way I've done or said it? That's different than I'm catching heat for my faith or for my belief. So it's just careful. You just have to kind of, I think really it's just look at yourself, make sure you're saying things. Sometimes we just say things wrong or we say things foolishly. And sometimes because of that, it's, what we receive is really about us, not about our faith. So, all right, we're in the last week, and we've done this. This series has sort of been this idea that the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, it really challenges us to an upside down way of living, a way of living that is really countercultural, that's different, almost flipped on its head of what would come naturally to us most of the time, and what culture would challenge us to or teach us most of the time. A lot of 5, 6, and 7 are things that are really kind of opposite of what we were taught, even me growing up in a Christian home, opposite in some ways of what I was taught in how to interact with people, what I was to value, the way I was to think, the way my heart was supposed to look like. Those things weren't done on purpose. It's just culturally, it's different than even what we're called to here. I was thinking about this last night. I was talking to my son about some things that we were dealing with him, and he's our youngest, and he has this this habit, I guess, and it's very noticeable with him, of any time that he does something wrong and he is corrected, he wants to give us an excuse, or I say excuse. He says, "No, Dad, I'm just trying to explain." So an excuse or an explanation. So I was talking with him about it last night, and when I say talking about it, I mean we were yelling. Okay, we were having a it was one of those good moments, one of those parenting high points, that, where you go to bed and think, I'm a good parent, not. But it's frustrating with him. But I know that Peter does not like to have to even think about that he did something wrong. He's a third child. He's a peacemaker. He does not handle that well. So what he does very clearly is that he makes an exception or an excuse or an explanation for everything that he does that's wrong. And I was laying in bed thinking about, what I should have said and what I didn't say and all these things last night. And I thought, I think really so many of us, when we read something like Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and it's hard for us, we don't we sometimes will look at these things and we'll find reasons why this particular thing doesn't apply to me. Or, well, I would live this way, but... So, we have a no-but rule in our house. Well, we have a desired no-but rule. But what I realized with Peter, and I think is true of all of us, honestly, is that when Peter makes excuses for what he does wrong, it causes him not to even think about it. So that's why things don't ever change. He's not learning because in his mind, instead of going, ooh, I did something I shouldn't do. I want to think about that. I want to process that. I want to figure out what I'm supposed to do, and I want to move this direction. Because he has an excuse or an exception or an explanation, it takes off his responsibility. And I think that's how we are a lot of times. So we oftentimes will see these things that seem really hard and we won't do them. And we have a reason why this particular one doesn't apply to me, or why at this moment I'm not going to do what it says to do. And then we never learn. So and what God does in us as our Father is he disciplines us, which is not like spanking us. It's training us. So he disciplines us for our good. He brings things to the surface in our lives that are outside of his best way for us. But if we don't listen to if we don't accept his training, Peter doesn't like to accept training because his initial thought is, this makes me feel bad about myself. So he shuts it out. If we do the same thing when we read something about God, like we read these things and we're like, oh, this makes me feel bad about myself. I don't want to feel bad about myself. None of us like to feel bad about myself. I'm going to make an excuse or an exception. And we don't think about it that way, but we do that. We don't learn from it. And we shut the door on his training of us, which his training of us is all, it says in Hebrews 12, always for our good and always leads to the peaceful fruit of righteousness. So as we go in and finish this out, and as you kind of reflect on everything from the last 3 weeks, I think, and really even how we live our lives, you know, think about that. Am I making some sort of excuse or exception, or, which sounds much better when Peter said it last night, I just want to explain why I didn't do what you told me to do, as if our explanation somehow makes it okay. So when just think about that as really just as we walk this Christian life. So a little recap from the last 3 weeks. First week was values turned upside down. We went through the Beatitudes and our changed purpose as Christ followers. This idea that really our values are called to be almost opposite of what is natural for us or cultural for us. Again, it's just so easy to say, I'm all those things. Yes, I'm a peacemaker. I'm pure in heart. All these things. It's easy to go, yeah, that's me, and kind of check it off. But I really think when God, through his word, he's digging to our marrow, which means we have to dig deeply. And it's important for us. If we want to grow in the fullness of who God has called us to be, we've got to dig deeply. The next week we did hearts turned upside down. We talked about anger, lust, public displays of spirituality, and good works, fasting. And we talked about it's instead of following our hearts, which is what the world challenges us to do, and we need to lead our hearts, and we lead our hearts by renewing our hearts, filling them with the Word, in the middle of our circumstances, digging into the Word to see what God's Word has to say about what we are going through. This strengthens our heart when we do that. We lead our heart by giving it, being vulnerable, getting involved. We lead our heart by cheering it, which means when we are low, we run, instead of running to something to medicate, we run to God and we allow him to give us comfort and give us joy and give us pleasure. My favorite psalm, one of my favorite psalms, 16:11, you make known to me the path of life. In your presence, there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Last week we talked about relationships turned upside down, marriage, oaths, retaliation, how we deal with our enemies, judging others, and the golden rule. We talked about in relationships our focus is not to be on me, but our focus is to be on he. Am I in my relationship seeking my best, or am I in my relationship seeking the best of others? Do I see in every relationship that I have my greater mission of loving God and loving others? Then this week we're closing out this growth course with the idea that the Sermon on the Mount really, it turns our security upside down. I really think that this particular topic is really what all of the Sermon on the Mount is about, because we will never be able to live what Jesus challenges us to in 5, 6, and 7 if we don't trust God. We cannot trust Him in justice. I mean, we can't not seek justice or retribution or turn the other cheek or all those things we talked about last week if we don't trust Him. Because what will we do if we don't trust Him to do those things for us? We'll do them ourselves. We can't live with our values if we don't trust God. We'll begin to look like the world. Because the world is focused on, I've got to take care of myself. If we don't trust God, our hearts will become hard and self-absorbed. They won't be soft and giving. They will become hard and self-protecting. Our relationships will be shallow and selfish. I think we often think about, I say this all the time, I think it's very easy for us to trust God for our salvation. It's harder to trust Him in the thing that I need at this moment in this day. It's easier to trust Him that I'll go to heaven when I die than it is that He's going to take care of my relational, my physical, my emotional, my all the needs that I have in a day-to-day basis. And we talked about this idea of hungering and thirsting for righteousness. If we don't trust God, we will never we will never be desperate for God in the way that a man who is dying of thirst is desperate for water. If we don't trust Him, we won't ever get there. Trust and security in God is a huge thing. So I think this is about the whole of the Sermon on the Mount, but today we're talking about these things that very specifically reveal our lack of trust in God. And the first one, are there any extra handouts? Or do we give them? Okay, would somebody grab one for me? Just, thanks. I want to make sure I know what I told y'all. I'm going in the same order. So here's some things that really... Somebody look up Matthew 6, verse 19. 6:19 through 24.
Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on the earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money.
All right, so obviously this one's talking about money and stuff. So I think sometimes we think just about money, but really this is also about the accumulation of things. This is saying several things in this particular passage. Stuff, our stuff, everything we acquire for ourselves is temporal. It will not last. And I think this is obvious to us. I mean, I don't think most people acquire things with the thought that they'll take them into eternity. We don't really think that way, at least not in this, not as Christians. I guess other religions might somehow think they can take that stuff with them. But it also talks about greed. This is really about greed. It's about accumulating more than you need. It's about security, obviously. It's about identity. So in this one, or the thought that I need to, what I acquire, what I accumulate gives me value or gives me worth, I think many of us could be there. So we may not think we take it to heaven, but many of us somehow look at the things we have and base our value on that. In where we used to live, it really seemed real obvious, and I would fall into this trap of being really content until somebody got something better than me, And then I wasn't so content anymore. And people, you know, you would look at and you would see someone else's house, and there was something that gave you a thought of, I should be able to afford a house like that. If I was successful and I was smart, and if I could buy that same house. Honestly, I don't notice it as much here. It probably is in some circles, but in our circles, I don't get that sense here. But there's a lot of materialism, and that materialism is how people sort of acknowledge their status and their success and their accomplishment. And if you are a person that kind of strives for accomplishment, you're very easily sucked into that world. And that is something I struggle with, ambition or accomplishment or a sense of value. Growing up, money was just a big deal in my house, you know, and there was a lot of discussion about what other people had. And I still remember, like, there are still people from my youth that I think of as being very rich because my parents would say they're rich because they have this. I think I probably told you this. I wanted a collared shirt. So, you know, wear t-shirts, like in just little t-shirts. Well, I wanted a shirt with a collar on it, like John Prather had. That's what I told my mom. I want a shirt with a collar on it like John Prather has. And my mom said, well, your father doesn't make as much money as John Prather's father does. So ever since then, I thought, boy, John Prather's rich. There was a store, I still laugh at it, there was a store that this is how bad it was. I wanted to go to this store called Wieners. There was a store called Wieners. I wanted to go to Wieners and get a collared shirt, you know. Well, so that, there was a lot of, it was just, there. And, you know, I told y'all about my grandfather who was really tight with money. I think even in my mother, I think a lot of that was born out of, that was born in them. That was what you were striving for, looking to achieve, was more money, more stuff. That was your value. This, in money, I think we see a very clear picture of idolatry. So much of the Sermon on the Mount is really about idolatry. What are we serving? What are we putting? What are we seeking? What are we looking to get? And money and stuff is the closest thing we have to sort of that Old Testament golden idol that you bow down to, because it's a physical thing. Like, we can idolize a lot of things, but our stuff and our money is something we can very easily serve and almost physically bow down to if we're not careful. Anybody have any issues with money here or stuff? Or Janine, thank you. You know, some people don't. This is not an issue for some people.
We take financial.
Oh, you're doing financial peace.
Yeah, it's very good for
Yeah.
It's very eye-opening. Like when he says, take a look at your checkbook and see where your money is going. It's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And your FICO scores.
Oh.
Everybody's like, oh, I have a high FICO scores, but it just tells you how much good credit you have.
The more debt you have that you pay off,
that's not a good gauge of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think this is, but really, this isn't a blasting of stuff, you know, but it's really, again, it's the going to that deeper place of, are you finding security in it?
Yeah.
Are you finding identity in it? It's, you know, I think we have to be really careful because all of us can probably look at someone else and think, oh, look at them laying up their treasure.
It's called keeping up with the Joneses.
But somebody else can look at us. You know, like you may think, I'm really good with my money. I do not splurge. But somebody else could look at you and say, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like look at how many, you know, that whatever you have in your refrigerator, you know, do you really need 14 salad dressing bottles or whatever, you know? You know, whatever your thing is. I mean, we just got to be careful. But I think that's a big one for a lot of people. Yes.
Do you think that when Jesus was preaching to the crowds and stuff, do you think they were laughing? Do you think he was cracking them up the way we're cracking up?
Who knows? You know, they kept following him around, so he might have had it. He might have had a little sense of humor. I don't know. You know, there were some times when I read his things, I think, you know, that was funny. Or that was sarcastic. Or, you know, boy, he got them. Or they probably weren't laughing, but they didn't even notice that he was getting them right there.
Well, I'm sure Jesus had a sense of humor.
Yeah, and I know Paul did. You know, I think Paul was probably a hoot. Yeah. Okay, somebody just right below that, Matthew 6:25.
Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes?
Keep going all the way, Cheryl, down to 33.
Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own.
Okay, so if I possibly can be materialistic, I can very much be this. Anxious. Worry. Just constantly thinking, how's this going to work out? How's this going to work out? How's this going to work out? I think what this particular passage is not talking so much about our luxuries, so maybe laying up treasure, sometimes that can be we accumulate more than we need or whatever, but this is really about just dealing with our basic needs, our basic requirements for life, clothing, food, maybe shelter. And I really think here we see a picture of God in our details, a picture of him where he says, I care about the littlest things about you. I care about how you live. I care about what you eat. I care about that you have clothing. And here there's an idolatry picture here too, because we can idolize even our work or things like that that meet our day-to-day needs. We can bow down to the altar of just the day-to-day details of our lives. It doesn't mean we don't work. It doesn't mean we don't take some responsibility, but it's what he's saying here is don't fret about things. And I think for us, for a lot of us, like for me, I tend to worry about, I would worry about living here. Where's my, you know, rent going to come from that was about more than my income was in, you know, Texas. We can worry about those things, but it's also kind of, I think, you know, when I spend a lot of time at age 49 worrying about age 65, okay, you know, that's the same kind of thing. God, wait, okay, you may be taking care of me now, but are you going to take care of me then? That's really what I'm saying when we have that anxiety, when you worry about a medical expense that is not reality. You know, I mean, there's one thing to go, wow, I have a bill right here that God, you need to pay this bill. But there's even another thing that says, what if I get sick?
Yeah.
So we got to, it's a big picture of just worry. And I love what he says here. He says, focus first on me. He says, you know, there's a lot of things you desire in life, a lot of needs you have, a lot of details in your life. But if you will focus on me. But you know what that means? Because that means the it's it's not that, and so sometimes we go, okay, I'm going to learn about God and my rent will be paid. We still are focusing on our rent. We're still focusing on our clothes. But what he's saying is, when you seek me and you grow in relationship with me and you grow in intimacy with me, you will trust me.
Exactly.
It takes the details out of it. And it's, and I know, you know, for me, a lot of times I just have to take a deep breath. I went to a conference this week. It was really good. And, it was about the church and the gospel and racial reconciliation. It was really good. But it was funny because so many of the talks that might have been about racial reconciliation, but there would be something in there that was really more about something dealing with me and my life at that moment. Many of them quoted from Matthew 7, where Jesus talks about all the things we do. He says, that doesn't matter. At the end of the day, unless you know me. And I remember I was just really encouraged. You know, it's like I just need to take a deep breath with all the issues in my life and just connect with God in intimacy. I just need to sit with Jesus for a little bit, because he transforms our hearts and we grow in a very natural place of peace and trust at that moment. And that's what he's saying. Seek me first. Just seek me, seek my kingdom. What that means, live your purpose. I'll take care of your stuff. I got you. And you will grow to a place of peace in that reality. Anybody else in here struggle with anxiety? Worry. Okay, yeah, let's say worry. Yeah, we don't like anxiety. You know, that sounds really harsh. Anybody worry ever about anything? Yeah.
Because anxiety attacks are no joke.
Yeah, so some of you are being honest.
A single mother, and my kids were still in school, and I didn't know how I was going to buy groceries. I mean, I had enough mm-hmm. to pay the rent, but I thought, what am I going to do? And finally, I just sat down and prayed. And you know, a couple of days later, there was, I don't know who this person was. It was from Florida. An envelope came, and inside of that was a check for $200. Wow. And there was a letter, and it said, I will never leave you or forsake you, sign Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I asked my daughter, I said, do we know anybody in Florida? She said, no, Mom. And as far as I'm concerned, that was from Christ.
You know, and I was, yeah, that's really neat, yeah. The way that note in there, because yeah. when... You know, I wasn't worried about my rent or my food, but when Stephanie and I had been separated, this was like 18 years ago, we got back together, I had a whole lot of worries. Like, how are you going to work this out, God? How are you going to work this out? How are you going to work this out? I just peppered him with questions. I knew what he was calling me to do, but he responded to me with three words. I love you. It wasn't, here's how I'm going to fix your problem. It was like, I love you. And what inspired me to... What gave me the courage to say, okay, I'm gonna go home and we're gonna work this out, was not the answers to all my worries. It was the fact that he loved me, and what that told me was, I'm not sending you, I'm beckoning you to go with me.
Yeah.
And so he was with me, and that's where we get that place of peace, when we realize he loves me, and we only get that in that place of relationship.
If I'm thankful for something, it changes my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Things when you're thinking about,
yeah.
Oh, how about this? But then if you think of the things that you really have and you're thankful for it, it changes it, you know.
Yeah.
The difference, God.
And when you seek the Lord, that's what happens. You start to think, look what I have.
Yes.
And not even physically. Look what I have in him.
Yes.
And look what he has blessed me with. Yeah, it's awesome. Somebody read Matthew 7, 7 through 11.
Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. The one who seeks finds. And to the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Which of you, your son, asks for bread? For you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children. How much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him?
I love it anytime that Jesus says something about how earthly parents are just naturally bad. I'm like, Okay, I feel better. He does the same thing in Hebrews 12. He says, your earthly fathers did the best they could. That's what he says, basically. They did the best they could. But God always does what is the best. You know, I'm like, oh yeah, I did the best I could. But this one, I think, I look at this and I think this is sometimes those things that we just desire. The things that we want.
Yeah.
Okay, so if the other one was really about some basic human needs, this one is sometimes those things we desire. And I think what Jesus is trying to show us here is, don't forget who God is, because this passage really reveals what we think of God's character. It's what we think of the heart of God. And I think I remember for years, I sort of had this picture of God as sort of out to get me. Like, he was just waiting for me to mess up. My thought of God was not of a God who is going to give me bread instead of a stone. It's like, he's going to give me the stone, and then he's going to make me eat it. And then if I don't eat it, I'm going to be in trouble. That, you know, I think I never would have said that. I didn't get that at the time, but as I looked back on the two pictures I had of God, really the post "I love you, God," the one that post that moment, and before that, I had a very hard sense of God's character, like he was sort of arbitrary. Like, okay, don't do this, oh, but do this. You know, it was like, oh, why? How can I keep? It was a very works-based thing, and when you have a works-based theology, you're constantly fearing messing up, because you. And what that means is you really fear his character. And what this is saying is, he's not out to get you. God wants. He loves to lavish you with what is good. So that's where the trust comes in. Do you trust that God knows what is good? This doesn't mean, God, I'm asking, I'm seeking, I'm knocking. Give me that BMW I have always wanted. So you know what? If I didn't so desperately want a BMW might be good for me. But I've always had a thing for BMW. I have a story for that too, but I won't tell you. But what he knows, there are so many things that I can tell. I desperately want this thing, but I know it wouldn't be good for me to have it. And God knows that. If I had that, I would worship it. So really, this is about God's character and saying, ask him and seek and give your heart to him. But trust that he's not going to give you a stone or a serpent. It's not about the ugly thing he's going to give you. He is going to give you what is good for you. Martel, did you have a question or a comment?
Well, I went on. But that's when I was a new Christian, I was just trying to be really good. I wanted, just like a father, he was a father figure. And I tried to do everything perfect and I'll beat myself up. So then I learned that, he loved me and who I am. And he wants to help me be better.
Yeah. That Hebrews 12, and I encourage you guys to read that sometime. Just spend some time looking at that. A lot of us bring earthly father junk into our relationship with God. Yes?
Yeah. When we go through all these things, the fear, the anxiety, the fear of messing up and all that, you don't think he lets those things come to us because he wants to build our character.
Right.
He wants to teach us how we should be according to the way he created us.
Right, because he knows what's best for us, and he knows where we're really going to find joy. And that Hebrews 12 was just so impactful for me, because it says that God disciplines us, but like I said, that's really a word for training. Mm-hmm. And it says that discipline is sorrowful, always painful for the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, it does hurt when God brings that thing to the surface, but he says he always does it for our good. What father if a father loves his son, he disciplines him. Yeah. A father who doesn't love his son or daughter doesn't discipline, doesn't care. And so that's that discipline. So it's like, it's not that he's out there just to destroy us when we mess up, but he's going to train us through that.
But we have to learn that.
Yeah. It's growing in and that's what relationship is.
Right.
That's why we grow in relationship. Yeah, Tasha.
You know what? And that's where my faith comes in. That's Mm-hmm. Times get hard and everything.
Yeah.
No matter how many obstacles that are in front of me, that I know that he knows it's not what I want, it's what I need.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Even obstacles. Yeah. Even those hard times, yeah. You know. Your story, I have a lot of stories like that too, or miraculous provision. I remember hearing those back when I was a lawyer, and I would just think, that's a great story, but I didn't want that story to happen to me. I didn't want to be in the place where I was so dependent, you know, but I needed that. And so that's, so God orchestrates those in our life. Okay, one more section. Chapter 7, verses starting in verse 15 through 20.
Beware of false prophets who come disguised as harmless sheep but are really vicious wolves. You can identify them by their fruit, that is, by the way they act. Can you pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? A good tree produces fruit, and a bad tree produces bad fruit. A good tree can't produce bad fruit, and a bad tree can't produce good fruit. So every tree that does not produce good fruit is chopped down and thrown into the fire. Yes, just as you can identify a tree by its fruit, so you can identify people by their actions.
So I put this one in this section because I think so often we put our security in our spiritual leaders. Okay. We put our security in our pastors. We put our security in our teachers. We put our security in authors who write Christian books. We put our security in pastors we see on TV or we hear from a lot, kind of celebrity pastors. And I think many people can be in this place, and it's one of the reasons it's a big deal for me that people don't think that me or Ryan or Evans or David or anybody have any sort of special access to God any more than any of you do. Because what happens is you put us on that pedestal. What happens when I screw up?
Yeah.
It messes with your faith. And we see that in these high profile pastors who fall. And they're just people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we have put some level of security. And so sometimes, I've seen this many times, those people fall. Mm-hmm. And the people that were following them walk away from their faith.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so it's so important. So I put it in here because it is important that we are careful in who we follow spiritually.
Yeah.
And that's why it's like, if I ever say anything, you go to the Word and look for it yourself. Don't take my word for it. Look at my life. Look at Ryan's life. Look at other spiritual leaders' lives. Watch for that. Be careful. And I think as I read this, I thought, you know, we have to have, first and foremost, our trust in the Lord,
exactly.
Period.
Exactly.
Everything else is on top of that and filtered through that. Yeah. So we just have to be careful. We're almost out of time. Let me go through these. Here's a thing, though. All of this is really about idols. Mm-hmm. An idol is something that occupies a place in your life that should be occupied by God alone. Mm-hmm. All of these three chapters. Those are idols. We don't think about idols. It's something that occupies a place in your life, identity, security, relationship, values that should be occupied by God or alone. It can be occupied by something, by someone, or by yourself. This city, when I first came here, my thought was, outside of the very clear poor community, this is a city of self-sufficiency. They feel like they have themselves covered. And that is an idol of self. And we have to be so careful that we don't get to that place of self-sufficiency. I don't need to worry about money. I got a good job. I'm taking care of myself. I have a lot of... I've done Dave Ramsey. I got my 6 months over here and this over here. That's great, but we can... that can very easily move us into a place where I've taken care of my finances. I don't need to trust God for my finances anymore. We always have to be in that place of dependency of God. And that's why when we are desperate people more readily come to the Lord because they have nothing of themselves. It is when you have too much of yourself that you do not see and realize the magnitude of what it means to have a relationship with God. Just some questions to think about if you want to figure out where your security is. Where does your energy go? So it's like the checkbook idea. Where you look at your checkbook, find out where your money goes?
Yeah.
Where does your energy and your effort go? What do you spend the most time mulling over and thinking about? What do you, and maybe it is your relationship with the Lord. That's great. But maybe it's not. So where does your energy go? What do you worry about? So if I worry about money, that means my security is probably in money. If I worry about friendship or loneliness, my security is in relationships. If I worry about where I am in my career, my security is in achievement. You know, so you got to find those things. What do you expect from God? Do you expect stones or do you expect bread? Do you expect Him to give you good things and trust that He knows what is good? And then who do you trust? This is a big one, I think. I spent a lot of time last year really mulling over my trust, even in my relationship with Stephanie. Do I trust Stephanie or do I trust God with Stephanie? It's very different. I remember Stephanie when we were first reunited after our separation, and she said, "I don't trust Mike, but I trust God with him." You know what that did? It took the burden off me, for one thing, but it also meant she's not going to be disappointed. If she's trusting me, she's likely to be disappointed. She's trusting God with me. Her trust is in God.
Yeah.
And trusting that He is dealing with me. And that's a whole another deal. I want to close with this section from Matthew 7, 24 through 27. I'll read it. "Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does them, and does not, hears these words of mine and does not do them, will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it." It's why I'm so big on, if you read something in the Word, you need to figure out how to apply it. It doesn't matter if we just hear it. We do it. But that really is this picture. This is where your security comes. You hear these words, you do them, you've got a rock. And you're not going to fall. Several years ago, I wrote a little thing based on Matthew 6:33. So I have these little bookmarks. This is your little party favor for this growth course. But let me read it for you. It's called "Seek Me." When I sought friends, the Lord said, "Seek me first." When I sought community, the Lord said, "Seek me first." When I sought healing, the Lord said, "Seek me first." When I sought my calling, the Lord said, "Seek me first." When I sought riches, the Lord said, "Seek me first." When I sought consolation, identity, security, respect, safety, pleasure, purpose, affirmation, the Lord said, "Bless me, praise me, boast in me, magnify me, exalt me, seek me." I sought the Lord, and He answered me, and He delivered me, and He is near. So that's my closing note for you guys. I got a bookmark for you, if, a little party favor. Let me pray for you guys. Thanks so much for being here these 4 weeks. And next week, no growth courses, breakfast at 9:30. And then a new growth course starts the next week.